Chapter 15. Denouement.
Denouement. The final part of a play, film, or narrative in which the strands of the plot are drawn together and matters are explained or resolved. Oxford English Dictionary.
There's a conventional reaction when you see a star. You anticipate he'll be a part of a particular denouement down the road, so you don't worry for that character.
As the Campbell government embarked on its third mandate, the major Western economies, including Canada, were in the middle of a two-year economic recession. For Prince Edward Island, 1974 was a good year economically, due to strong agricultural prices and growth in the public sector and tourism. Housing and family farm initiatives were putting well-leveraged funds into circulation, as were enhanced federal and provincial transfers to individual islanders and families. The two main preoccupations that PEI shared with the rest of the world were galloping inflation and the energy crisis triggered by the 1973-74 Arab oil embargoes. As he had been doing from the early 1970s, Alex Campbell urged a balanced approach to growth. In an October 1973 address to the Empire Club in Toronto, he offered this view.
In the late 1950s and up until the mid or late 1960s, most Prince Edward Islanders, and certainly most Prince Edward Island politicians, strongly advocated the need for our province to become industrialized, to establish job-producing industries at whatever cost, to pull Prince Edward Island up by its bootstraps, and to bring our province into the glories of the 20th century. However, what we have witnessed in very recent years is the apparent fallacy of the belief that rapid industrialization necessarily produces a better quality of life. We in our province are beginning to realize and appreciate that our slowness in keeping up with our North American neighbors may well have been a blessing in disguise.
In keeping with this worldview, Campbell's third-term government gave priority attention to land use and ownership, environmental stewardship, energy conservation, and economic development and innovation. In economic development, the focus was principally on small and practical initiatives and on traditional or primary industries. These were complemented by industrial malls on the outskirts of Charlottetown and Summerside that focused on small manufacturing, combined with efforts to enhance downtown development of the two urban centers.
Growing burdens of government.
While Ben Crowe's surveys for the Liberal Party showed that protection of the island's land resource was one of the most broadly supported policy objectives, implementation and administration in this area caused public frustration throughout the third mandate. Farmers grumbled about regulations requiring buffer zones along streams or restrictions on manure piles. People wanting to subdivide land bridled against restrictions on highway access. To property owners unaccustomed to land use restrictions, these requirements smacked of intrusive government and excessive red tape. No single policy attracted more widespread aggravation than a $3 registration fee on motor vehicles to fund gathering up derelict car bodies. Jim Lee says that the measure was a significant factor in his victory as a Conservative candidate in a February 1975 by-election, called to fill the seat vacated when Gordon Bennett was named Lieutenant Governor. Lee recalls, "While $3 was insignificant, it did not resonate well with the voters. It was a gift to the opposition, and we just latched onto it and made hay with it." As the changes of the 1960s and 70s accumulated, rural Prince Edward Islanders grew increasingly concerned about community decline, with the loss of familiar institutions and services and perceived quality of life. While the closing of local schools was the most obvious indicator of change at the community level, farms continued to consolidate, plus local stores and gas pumps were disappearing for economic or environmental reasons. Not least of all, young people moved away for professional and educational opportunities in even greater numbers than in earlier generations. Ironically, it was in urban communities and more built-up areas that the most organized pushback developed, such as the 1977 resistance to school consolidation in the Borden area and generally in eastern Prince County. Similar controversies in Queens County and in the Montague area suggest that it was either the communities with historically stronger schools that resisted the late stages of consolidation, or that the case for consolidation was less compelling for students in the elementary years. By early 1976, the Campbell Liberals began sending signals that the public should temper its expectations of government. The 1976 speech from the throne, one of the shortest on record, referred twice in the second paragraph to troubled times and pointed to areas of paramount concern which require the utmost attention and dedication of government and members of the Legislative Assembly, namely energy shortages, cost and infrastructure investments, and the need to exercise restraint in public spending. During the ensuing debate, Premier Campbell spoke of the government's optimism as reflected by the buoyant and lively economy and gave assurances that the province's financial condition had never been better.
Political caste changes and milestones.
In 1976, there were changes in the front bench on both sides of the legislature. At mid-year, Finance Minister T. Earl Hickey retired from politics after a decade in office and received widespread accolades for his professionalism and sound stewardship of the province's economy. Those who knew Hickey well, especially Alex Campbell as his fifth prince running mate, would miss his quick, gentle wit. In August, Conservative leader Mel McQuaid was appointed to the Prince Edward Island Supreme Court, a reminder that these were gentler times when a respected opponent could be rewarded for public service. While the appointment was made by the federal government, it would not have occurred without Premier Campbell's blessing. These two departures, in addition to the sudden death of 4th Queen's Conservative MLA Vernon McIntyre and the resignation from politics of 2nd Prince MLA Josh MacArthur, brought the number of vacant seats in the legislature to 4. The opposition Conservatives were gearing up to select a new leader to replace Mel McQuaid. As of January 1976, the party was described in an Evening Patriot editorial as still weak and ineffectual, and as having been shocked to their very bootstraps by the magnitude of the 1974 Liberal victory. At their September 1976 leadership convention, the Progressive Conservatives chose longtime federal MP Angus MacLean over newly elected MLA Jim Lee. MacLean asked whether the development plan's positive effects could justify the amount being spent on it, and whether the increasing tangle of regulations might be wearing voters down. MacLean, then aged 62, was widely admired for his war record and for his political track record of 10 consecutive victories, which rendered him the longest-serving MP in PEI history, as well as being a down-to-earth blueberry farmer. Because he was perceived to be nearing political retirement and had homespun style, the Liberals underestimated MacLean. They might have changed that view on November 8, 1976, when the Conservatives won 3 of 4 by-elections, including Earl Hickey's seat in 5th Prince. Campbell and MacLean both campaigned actively in what was termed a mini-election, with MacLean winning in 4th Queen's by 250 votes over John Breaux, who described it as a campaign in which we tried to out-nice each other. While commentators said that the by-elections had been devoid of issues, it was clear that the outcome brought no joy for the Liberals, even if the Conservatives still had work to do in building a province-wide organization. In 1976, speculation that Alex Campbell would give up the premiership hit a fever pitch. An editorial surmised that Campbell would resign to run for the federal Malpec seat, vacated by Angus MacLean, and that Catherine Colbeck would replace Campbell as Liberal leader. This conjecture was triggered by Campbell's decision to invite Colbeck to join him at a First Minister's meeting in Edmonton. Earlier in the year, 2nd King's MLA Walter Dingwall had speculated that Campbell was about to retire and take up a judicial appointment, the apparent trigger being a reference to a legacy in the 1976 speech from the throne. Campbell did little but smile when questioned by reporters. Prognostications about Alex Campbell's post-political future started as early as 1972, when it was rumoured that Chief Justice St. Clair Traynor might retire and be succeeded by Campbell. At the time, it was suggested that Lorne Bonnell and Bob Skuerman, and possibly John Maloney, would square off for the Liberal leadership. In 1977, the speculation about Campbell's interest in entering federal politics persisted, with a report in the Financial Post stating that Dan MacDonald would go to the Senate and Campbell would seek election in the Cardigan riding. This time, Campbell offered an explicit but good-natured denial, saying that he was surprised that the newspaper would use its front page for speculative stories, and that the writers were obviously unaware of my decision to remain in provincial politics and seek a further term as premier. Alex Campbell reached an historic milestone on April 6, 1977, when he became Prince Edward Island's longest-serving premier, at 10 years, 8 months, and 4 days, surpassing the record set by Sir William Sullivan, who served as a Conservative premier from 1879 to 1889. Campbell accepted congratulations from both sides of the legislature, adding that he looked forward to the next 10 years and possibly more in office. The Premier devoted most of his remarks to reminding the House of the accomplishments of Sir William Sullivan. That he did so was in keeping with Campbell's natural modesty, his interest in Prince Edward Island history, and especially his political instincts not to encourage speculation that he might be thinking about his own legacy.
Lead up to an election.
The speech from the throne that launched the 1977 legislative session featured commitments to decentralization, such as enhanced regional service centres and the development of tourist facilities at Mill River, and an emphasis on the need for more year-round jobs in the private sector. The speech was upfront in acknowledging that private sector growth meant that changes must occur in our island society, beginning with a reinforcement of the work ethic. The government announced the construction of a new courthouse and a commitment to proceed with the new amalgamated hospital in Charlottetown. It continued to lobby at the regional level and with the federal government to have a new Atlantic Veterinary College located at UPEI, a matter that first came before the PEI cabinet in October 1975. The Campbell government was criticized by Angus MacLean and the opposition, as well as by some media commentators, for trying to do too much. An Eastern Graphic editorial, prompted by a proposal to regulate student-teacher ratios in private daycares, protested that this session of the legislature seems destined to go down as the one where government is prepared to get involved in practically every sphere of life. The most broadly supported initiative was January's EnerSave Days, which received the endorsement of MacLean and the media. Behind the scenes, Campbell's senior team continued to squabble over PEI's involvement in the Point Lepreau nuclear generating station. Agriculture Minister Bud Ings had his finger on the pulse of the farming community and was aware of an array of irritating issues, from limitation on road access to manure pile regulations to vertical integration to the perennial challenges of prices and markets. Because of this accumulation of issues and weariness with change, Ings knew that farmers were not easy to please in 1978. Early in 1978, Ben Crowe conducted his sixth study of Prince Edward Island political attitudes. On the mock ballot, Crowe found that Liberal support had dropped back to 49%, the same level as their 1972 nadir, and 5% below the party's popular vote in 1974. The Conservatives, by contrast, had improved their standing to 45% from 40% in 1974. When it came to the imagery of the leaders, Campbell and MacLean both received good overall acceptance ratings, but on 15 of the 25 imagery characteristics presented to prospective voters, the two leaders drew significantly different responses. Campbell was perceived to be more intelligent, imaginative, and resourceful, and as having the brighter, fresher personality. Finally, after 12 years in office, Campbell was perceived to be the right age, whereas MacLean was perceived to be too old. MacLean had the edge when it came to rapport with the people and his perceived commitment to preserving the island way of life. Both men received high marks for integrity. Overall, Premier Campbell's level of acceptance among the total electorate was at least as high as his previous peak year of 1970. The most stigmatizing point for Campbell continued to be the perception that he was more interested in planning than action. Given the overall positive ratings for Alex Campbell's leadership, the most ominous finding in the Crowe survey concerned the outlook of respondents, with 73% believing that the economic environment of the island was only fair and expecting that the economy would tighten up or remain static in the couple of years ahead. In summary, Alex Campbell would face a challenging environment and a formidable opponent in the 1978 election. Crowe's overriding recommendation to the Liberals was to avoid the appearance of arrogance. New Year's prognostications for 1978 included speculation about likely election timing, with the general consensus favouring late spring, although there were many who did not expect an election until the fall. Premier Campbell offered only the vague prediction that the election would likely be fought on dry ground. Catherine Colbeck announced in December 1977 that she would not be running, as she wished to devote more attention to the family business. Bruce Stewart opted not to seek re-election. The 1978 legislative session opened on March 2nd, with a speech from the throne emphasizing programs for the primary farming and fishing sectors and a priority to encourage employment-intensive small industry. Angus MacLean termed the speech a deathbed repentance. Alex Campbell accused the Conservatives of being the party of doom and gloom. In an interview with a Canadian Press reporter, MacLean complained that nothing emerged in the last election or the one before it. He predicted, "This time, we feel people will respond to the issue of loss of autonomy over local affairs." 3 weeks into the session, Finance Minister Bennett Campbell presented a budget calling for no new taxes and a series of tailored tax breaks for seniors, status Indians, owners of woodlots, and companies investing in research and development. After Conservative finance critic Lloyd MacPhail completed his address in response to the budget, Premier Campbell announced that there would be an election on April 24th. As the parties headed out on the campaign trail, Angus MacLean offered this Delphic political wisdom. "The thing about elections is that trends that are discernible at all usually turn out to be greater than they appear to be."
The 1978 campaign.
In the lead-up to the campaign, there were media reports about the Conservatives not being well organized and about Angus MacLean being indecisive, although things appeared to be on a steadier footing by the time the election was called. Unlike previous elections during Alex Campbell's time, the Liberals were not as prepared as they should have been. Mike Skuurman stepped away from the role of campaign manager after an election planning meeting at Bill Beliveau's farm in Wood Islands, during which Andy Wells berated John Maloney about nuclear power and PEI's involvement in Point Lepreau. Skuurman found that things changed dramatically after that meeting, and it wasn't going to be fun anymore, saying, "It's not for me to judge the merits of nuclear power, but it was so unfair to John." Skuurman was replaced by party president Joe Giz, while Andy Wells took a leave from the Institute of Man and Resources to play a full-time role in the campaign. Sid Green had given up the lead fundraising role and was replaced by Charlottetown car dealer Merlin Clark. John Berhoe, Percy Down and Len Bradley brought new blood, and Bill Morrison continued in his role as executive director of the party, while Bill Beliveau advised on communications. There are differing reports on whether Alex Campbell was in top form. While some of those close to the campaign, like Andy Wells and Bill Beliveau, say Campbell was tired, the general consensus is that he was still running well ahead of the party. Leonard Bradley says that Campbell was likely tired of petty politics, but when it came to the campaign, it seemed to me that Alex was doing all the work himself. This view is corroborated by Tim Banks. Banks was approached in early January of 1978 by the Premier, who asked him to arrange events in Prince County, including the Summerside kickoff rally, and to work on creative ways to engage youth. Banks says, "Can you imagine the Premier calling you and asking you to organize a rally?" For 24-year-old Banks, who had been involved in previous elections at the local level, it was an eye-opener. After province-wide election planning meetings in Charlottetown, Banks walked away thinking that this thing is not very well organized. The Liberal campaign was criticized by some for being too slick. Gilbert Clements complained about professional photographs that had our necks all crooked. Some Liberals dismissed the Conservative advertisements as being amateurish. The parties estimated that they would each spend as much as $150,000 on the campaign, the greater part of it going toward advertising. If Campbell was tired, it didn't show on the campaign trail. He crisscrossed the province, boosting the troops, speaking at rallies, and meeting the people on Campbell days. True to form, he was at his best one-on-one. Wayne McKinnon, who worked as a volunteer on the campaign, says, "I think he was as good as ever. Heading into the 1978 campaign, he was committed to carrying on for another 4 years." Despite the caution given by Ben Crow to avoid the appearance of arrogance, there was a highly visible misstep at a Montague campaign rally when Joe Giz, as chair, refused to allow questions from the floor. This was exploited by Angus MacLean at PC rallies during the final week of the campaign. There was also a disputed report that Campbell had said during a home visit in Fourth Queens that the district should vote Liberal or else its roads wouldn't get the same level of service, which the Eastern Graphic called one of the most arrogant statements to have been made in this election campaign. While it was implausible that Campbell would make such a statement, the allegation had to hurt in an otherwise low-key campaign. The Liberal team of candidates was not as strong as in previous elections. Of the original 1966 cabinet, only Cecil Miller and Alex Campbell offered in 1978. In the run-up to the election, Campbell tried to persuade Miller and his third Queen's running mate, Levi McNally, to step aside in favor of younger candidates. Lawyer Gerard Mitchell and schoolteacher Paul Connolly were prepared to seek the nomination, and Ben Crowe's polling suggested that Liberal support was weak in the district. Campbell recalls, "I invited Cecil in and suggested that he take his retirement from politics, but he was adamant. He felt that he and Levi could pull it off. It was a no-win situation for me and the party. If we had forced the issue, we would have lost a lot of Liberal votes and likely lost the district anyway." The Progressive Conservatives went on to win the two seats in 3rd Queen's by decisive margins. In 5th Queen's, Campbell encouraged Jeannie Revel to seek the nomination, but she didn't feel the timing was right in family or professional terms. Jim Lee would be re-elected as Progressive Conservative MLA for the district. It was shaping up to be a close election where every seat would count. Alex Campbell cautioned Liberal stalwarts at the party's opening rally in Summerside, with 2,000 people in attendance, that no one had the election sewn up. The Progressive Conservative platform rested on 10 principles, reinforcing an overall rural renaissance theme. They made few promises, which Angus MacLean said were merely a way of bribing people with their own money. The Conservatives did undertake to increase the number of farms, something that had not happened on Prince Edward Island since the 19th century, and to put the brakes on school consolidation. The focus of the Liberal platform was on economic self-reliance and job creation, the most palpable promise being to create 2,000 jobs in the next 3 or 4 years, with an emphasis on private sector growth. Martin Dorrell wrote in the Globe and Mail that the Liberal platform was jammed with promises and schemes to employ, educate, and enrich islanders. By election day, it was clear that the parties were in a tight race. When the votes were counted, with a high voter turnout of 86.3%, Alex Campbell's Liberals were back where they had started out in 1966, with 17 seats in the legislature to 15 for Angus MacLean's Progressive Conservatives. While Campbell projected confidence in his public appearances, saying it was going to be an interesting 4 years, he took the result as a rejection. He did not draw much satisfaction from the fact that, in addition to being Prince Edward Island's longest-serving premier, he was now the only one to be elected 4 times and, moreover, to win 4 consecutive elections. The 1978 popular vote was much tighter than had been the case in 1970 or 1974, with the Liberals taking 50.7% to 48.2% for the Progressive Conservatives, while the NDP picked up a modest 1.1%. While Angus MacLean oriented his campaign toward rural voters, the Progressive Conservatives gained most of their ground in urban and suburban ridings. The Liberals found their main strength in rural areas, taking all 12 seats in the province's 6 most rural districts. The Conservatives, on the other hand, took 9 out of 12 seats in the more urban or suburban ridings, where the Liberals managed to elect only Campbell and Cabinet Ministers John Maloney and George Proud. As was characteristic of PEI elections, there were many close contests. Of 7 seats that were decided by fewer than 80 votes, the Progressive Conservatives won 5, suggesting that the Liberals put up a less effective ground game, possibly due to overconfidence. A few days prior to the election, it was reported in a front-page newspaper article that party workers at Liberal headquarters were placing $5 bets on the likely outcome, with most of them predicting the Liberals would take between 20 and 27 seats. In the same article, Angus MacLean was quoted as saying that he sensed a swing in voter sympathies, not unlike the one that had brought Alberta's Progressive Conservatives to office in 1971. When they met in Charlottetown after the outcome had been determined, Campbell said to MacLean, "Congratulations, Angus. You did much better than I expected." MacLean replied, "Yes, but not as good as I predicted." The Conservative leader interpreted the results prophetically, saying, "It's just a matter of time and whether it's going to be one fell swoop or in installments." Jim McNeill offered an astute assessment of the 1978 election in his editorial in the Eastern Graphic, commenting, "Without question, certain areas of government involvement turned voters against the Campbell government. Land use regulations, parent involvement in the school system and school consolidation, rural road improvement, calling a spring election highlighted this, and a growing awareness of government bureaucracy and red tape were all issues that had some influence on the voters. McNeill observed that Campbell faced an unenviable task in selecting 9 cabinet members and a speaker from his reduced government caucus. Premier Campbell reflected on the election outcome with the sanguine comment, "It was rather a large message and it takes some time to digest." Almost 3 decades later, Campbell was of the view that everyone needed a rest from development. Everyone needed a pause.
The aftermath.
For Alex Campbell, the 1978 election outcome presented a dramatically different prospect from his first election. In 1966, the party was on its way up after being in opposition for 7 years. In 1978, it was hard to avoid the conclusion that they were on the way down. Campbell knew that after 12 years in government, he didn't have the energy to go back to the precarious political tightrope of his first term. What's more, he didn't have the same team as in 1966. The only Liberal MLA apart from the Premier remaining from 1966 was Robert Campbell, who had been vocally critical of the government since being dropped from cabinet in 1974. On election night, the straight-spoken First Prince MLA, who was re-elected with one of the biggest majorities in the province, offered the view that the Liberals had lost ground because there had been too many regulations in the last few years, including those affecting land use, farming, and building. Alex Campbell agreed that the perception of too much red tape and bureaucracy had hurt the Liberals. In a post-mortem on the day after the election, Campbell allowed that he had some big decisions to make, including when to call the legislature into session. In the course of interviews, he made an uncharacteristically blunt comment about bureaucrats, saying, "I will be making it very clear to a person on the public payroll that I want them to get off their butts and to sympathetically and helpfully assist individuals who approach government in any office or any board or commission to achieve whatever it is they came in to achieve." The remarks triggered the expected outrage from civil service union leaders. Campbell later regretted that he had not simply apologized for his comments. The theme of regulatory and bureaucratic burden remained in the headlines in the immediate post-election period. An editorial in The Guardian picked up on Robert Campbell's election night assessment and suggested, "Very likely this is one of the main messages the electorate was giving the government. Let's do more for ourselves, without excessive control." The editorial went on to note that the cabinet minister most closely associated with regulation and land use controls had gone down to defeat, albeit in a close race, obviously referring to Minister of Tourism, Parks and Conservation, Gilbert Clements. The editorial went on to make one of the soundest observations about the 1978 election outcome, that Islanders had a canny way of evening up the score, noting that it was done with great expertise, including vote splitting. Alex Campbell did not waste time before naming his cabinet. They were sworn in on April 27th, 3 days after the election. Bennett Campbell continued in finance and John Maloney in industry and commerce. Bud Ings took on health and social services, and George Henderson moved to highways and public works. Arthur MacDonald, who had joined cabinet in 1976 as provincial secretary, added tourism, parks and conservation. Eddie Clark came into cabinet for the first time as Minister of Agriculture and Forestry, along with Jim Fay as Minister without portfolio, responsible for the PEI Housing Authority. Longtime MLA Robert Campbell returned to cabinet as Minister of Fisheries. As soon as Campbell named his cabinet, one of the first initiatives was to appoint a task force on red tape, chaired by George Proud, with a mandate to look into regulations affecting land use and building permits and report back in 3 weeks. The task force reported that the procedures could be simplified in most cases and the time frames could be lessened substantially. The recommendations ranged from combining all matters to do with land and buildings into a new Department of Municipal Affairs, to expanding training programs for public servants to facilitate the goal of service to the public. The legislature went back to work for several weeks, starting on June 6th, to deal with the operating and capital budget and with selected aspects of the legislative backlog that had been left at the time of dissolution. The mood was testy, with the Conservative opposition flexing their muscles and many on the Liberal front bench learning the ropes. A new Family Law Reform Act was adopted, and MLA salaries were increased from $10,500 to $15,000 annually. The most heated exchanges came when the opposition sought to reprimand freshman minister Jim Fay for what they claimed was his failure to cooperate with an inquiry into three dismissals at the Housing Authority. As the legislature was prorogued in mid-July, the reviews were mediocre. A Journal Pioneer editorial reflecting on the session commented, "One gets the impression that it isn't a bit too soon for the government, that all it wants is to go about its business quietly and keep a very, very low profile. It has not quite recovered from the shock of the election, but recovery is coming because, after all, it is just as much in power as if it held all 32 seats in the House." The editorial commented that the cabinet was certainly not the strongest that Premier Campbell had headed, and that public attention during the legislative session had been focused more on the opposition than on the government. Pat Binns, who sat as an MLA for the first time in the session following the 1978 election, says of his impressions of Premier Campbell, "You could get the sense that a personal change was on his mind. But as an opposition member, he was still the boss, the guy in charge." In mid-June 1978, Campbell took part in the sixth annual meeting of the New England Governors and Eastern Canadian Premiers in Whitefield, New Hampshire, where energy cooperation and renewable energy were primary topics for discussion. Campbell was invited to present a paper on alternate energy technologies and PEI's experience, telling his colleagues that the energy crisis offered genuine opportunities to turn a challenge into an advantage. Campbell added the caveat that it would require rethinking of traditional economics and restructuring of much of our economic and social policy at both the government and private level to take full advantage of those opportunities.
However, to take full advantage of these opportunities requires a rethinking of much of the traditional and still current economic thought, as well as a restructuring of much of our economic and social policy at both the government and private level. It would be foolhardy to suggest these fundamental social and economic adjustments are easily and readily arrived at. Structural change always carries with it trauma, temporary dislocations, and considerable resistance. However, we are rapidly becoming convinced of the need for such restructuring because of the long-term advantages to the people of our province.
In early August 1978, Alex and Marilyn Campbell attended their 13th summer gathering of Canadian premiers in Regina. The main topic of discussion was the federal government's proposal to patriate the Constitution, contingent on securing majority support from each region in a national plebiscite. This proposal was angrily rejected by the premiers, who chafed at the notion of constitutional change without the support of the province. While Alex Campbell used more moderate language than some of his colleagues, he did not miss the opportunity to assert the provincial status of Prince Edward Island, saying that the federal suggestion was one of only many that could be made, and that Canada is made up of provinces, not regions.
Bowing out.
Campbell retreated to his family refuge at Stanley Bridge for most of the month of August. Marilyn and the family were glad to have him home. As had been the case from his youth, Stanley offered Campbell both solitude and reinvigoration. He didn't consult widely as he considered his future. The gossip mills were ready to go into action with the slightest tidbit of news. As he reflected on things, Campbell realized that, "I was exhausted, and I certainly wasn't getting the pleasure out of the daily routine." Campbell's son Blair recalls his father sitting at the picnic table in the yard at Stanley during that time of decision when a skunk came along. The family got a laugh out of that. On September 11, 1978, Campbell called a news conference to announce that he was stepping down immediately as premier. While the decision had been widely anticipated, the news that Alex Campbell would no longer be premier came as a shock to those close to Prince Edward Island politics. An editorial in the Journal Pioneer said, "The actual announcement was almost like a physical blow." The editorial reflected that since his resounding victory in 1970, Campbell had been king, with one of the strongest ministries the province ever had, and he was its undisputed master. An editorial in the Evening Patriot reviewed Campbell's substantive contributions and said, "His personal integrity was the hallmark of his leadership during the past 12 years." Campbell was open and reflective. He told the September 11th news conference, "It's more difficult to resign than it is to enlist. I loved what I was doing." When asked about the fact that his resignation would leave his party in political peril, Campbell demonstrated both his political pragmatism and his way with words, saying, "There will always be several reasons why you shouldn't leave public life. If you yield to those considerations, you sooner or later develop a case of smallwooditis, so that it is never time to leave." On the previous Friday, Campbell had called the four-person team in his office together to let them know in advance about his intention to step down. Ann Smith, who served as secretary and receptionist in the office from 1973, says that even though they knew there was something big going on, the news still came as a personal shock. For Smith, working in the premier's office was, like Camelot, every day was a standout day. She says, "Everyone had total respect for the premier," adding that Campbell didn't demand respect and loyalty. It was just there. He created it in us. Campbell took a week to clean out his office and tidy up loose ends. Sherry Finley, who had been Campbell's assistant from his first days as premier, prepared extensive boxes of files to go to the provincial archives. The going-away activities were modest but meaningful, including a low-key but well-attended open house reception at the premier's office on September 15th, and later a boat cruise at Stanley Bridge for Campbell's immediate staff. Campbell's resignation became official on September 18th, when interim leader Bennett Campbell and his cabinet were sworn in by Lieutenant Governor Gordon Bennett. After his summer of respite and reflection, Alex Campbell was back to his ebullient, good-natured self, including as the practical joker. Marilyn Campbell had the ultimate pronouncement when questioned about Alex's decision to resign, saying simply, "It's good to get him back." When asked about future plans, Marilyn said, "I do know we've got a lot of vegetables, and I'm going to start making pickles." Alex and Marilyn Campbell took a month and drove to Florida for their longest vacation ever. While in office as premier, vacations were a week to 10 days maximum and were often hastily organized. Marilyn says of the adaptation to post-political life, "It wasn't difficult. In fact, it was very smooth to have Alec, as she calls her husband, around and home for dinner. When Campbell was in government, he was home for dinner most nights, but late." Marilyn says, "The kids were certainly happy to have him around." At the time of his resignation and through the fall of 1978, Campbell received many well wishes and personal accolades. These culminated in a dinner of appreciation organized by the Prince Edward Island Liberal Party on November 25th. The following week, Campbell announced his resignation as a member of the legislature. On December 1st, his birthday, Campbell was appointed as a Justice of the Supreme Court of Prince Edward Island, where he would go on to serve for 16 years until his 1994 retirement. Alex Campbell recalls that, "It took quite some time before I was able to rinse the political instincts out of my soul. I used to wait at the back door for the Guardian to arrive in the morning, or when the radio news would come on, my nerves would still jingle. So it took quite a number of months." In time, Campbell would come to appreciate not being in active political life. As he explained, "I can recall driving home from Charlottetown to Summerside and passing a community hall with 50 cars out front and thinking, 'Thank God I don't have to be at that meeting.'"
For the history books.
Within the space of 20 years, Alex Campbell had been active in 6 provincial election campaigns, 6 federal elections, the Prince Edward Island Liberal Leadership Contest, and 11 provincial by-elections. At the age of 44, he left politics as Prince Edward Island's longest-serving premier and as the long-standing dean of Canadian First Ministers. With the exception of the single vote loss to Watson McNaught for the 1963 federal nomination, Campbell retired from political life without ever suffering a defeat. What's more, he stepped down with his integrity intact and with the satisfaction of having made a substantive imprint. In the world of politics, and especially in the closely contested world of Prince Edward Island politics, this was a record for the history books.